It is a spring-like day in the West Village of New York, and I'm lucky enough to be interviewing Dan Wackerman from the Peccadillo Theatre Company. He's the artistic director. At the moment, they're playing a show called Room Service at the Soho Playhouse, where it's moved. This show is quite incredible. The word of mouth about it is wonderful. And when I attended the show, I can't remember recently sitting in something where there's been such concerted theatre-shaking laughter from a whole audience all together. So, Dan, welcome to Theatre Voice.
Thank you. Very nice to be here.
I'm fascinated by both the economics and the logistics of starting up with a small show off-Broadway. You started at Bank Street Theatre, which has very few seats, and you have a cast that looks like about 11. How does this start? How did it work?
Well, we began Room Service as what they call an equity showcase production, which allows us to pay the actors a stipend. I should say little more than a stipend, because it only amounts to a few dollars for weeks of work, including the performance period, which last summer was 5 weeks. So they ran for 5 weeks, July into August of last summer, and the show was very well received. We were able to raise the money from commercial producers to move it off Broadway late in the fall. It took a good 2.5 months to pull it all together, but it did transfer to the Soho Playhouse in November.
You're now in an open run there, having just come through what looked like a very successful Christmas period.
Yes, we did. Well, it's been announced as a limited run as a way of starting up the show. Right now we're selling tickets through the end of January, but if things continue to go well, we could play on and on. We'll just have to wait and see. But the initial run was announced through the end of January.
Do you know how the economics work? Because, as I say, you seem to have something like 11 people on the stage. There's obviously company to support, and behind the scenes staff, and I think now you're in a house with 175 seats.
Yes, that's right, 175 seats, 12 actors, two stage managers, and we'll soon be plugging in the understudies. So we're looking at equity salaries for 15, 16 people. So that's quite large. I mean, I would say you could call it enormous by today's standards. You just don't see shows of this size off Broadway any longer. And it is a small house. 175 seats is not a large off-Broadway house. So it's an extremely unusual move. Not many people would dare it, but fools rush in, as they say.
And is the hope that it will then move, having gone from small to small-medium, if you like, it might move to a larger off-Broadway house or even onto Broadway itself?
Well, it's possible, of course. Talk, you know, but I don't think it would move into a larger house, whether off Broadway or Broadway, with the current cast, which is a shame. I say that regretfully, because they're all such wonderful, wonderful actors. But, you know, where theater's concerned, the bottom line always comes into play, and these are not terribly well-known actors, all quite fine, but not terribly well-known. And so to fill a house larger than 200 seats, inevitably producers start talking about name actors and name above the marquee and all that sort of thing. So, yes, there's been some talk in that direction, but right now we're quite happy to sit down at the Soho Playhouse and play for a while.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about the show? The name may mean something to some of our listeners, because in 1938, I think it was produced as a movie starring three of the Marx Brothers.
Yes, exactly. Well, it was done on Broadway in 1937. I should mention the playwrights, both such craftsmen, John Murray and Alan Boritz, and they were workaday screenwriters in Hollywood for many, many years. In fact, they were both blacklisted in the 50s. But today they are best known as the authors of Room Service, which in many ways is a landmark comedy. It was one of the early great screwball comedies on Broadway. Now, most people associate that phrase with the movies. There were some wonderful examples of it on stage as well, and this, in my opinion, is the finest. It's also, you know, you could use the word farce to describe it, although we've been discouraged from using that word, interestingly, because American audiences don't go for farces, I'm told, and so we use the phrase screwball. But in any case, it's a high-velocity comedy.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about the plot and some of the characters?
Oh, well, hard to do in a short period of time. It's complicated plot, but essentially revolves around a producer who's holed up in a hotel with 19 starving actors. They're trying to get a play on. And
that's a play onto Broadway, isn't it?
That's a play onto Broadway, which is called Godspeed. The play within the play is called Godspeed. And so they're rehearsing it at the hotel and taking advantage of the hotel's room service, and the bill is climbing and climbing, and they're not paying it. And so they're pressured to pay up or get out, and eventually the hotel supervisor arrives and threatens to evict them all. And so the producer, who's a sort of a wily, disreputable sort, concocts stratagem after stratagem as a way of keeping them in the hotel. And so you've got doors slamming and people running in and out and hiding under beds and in closets, and so it is very much a farce in that sense. The plot grows in outrageousness, and it's eventually resolved by a deus ex machina in the form of a southern senator called Senator Blake.
Thank you. How did you select Room Service? It's pretty much disappeared from view apart from on vintage DVDs. What made you go for this play?
Well, it came to me in the nick of time. We were involved in another project earlier in the year, which fell apart quite disastrously over issues relating to the rights of that revival. And so at the last minute, a board member approached me and said it's the funniest play she'd ever seen. She'd seen it on Broadway many years ago, and thought it was a perfect choice for Peccadillo, because of course we do only classic American comedy and drama. And I had heard of the movie, of course, most people have, the Marx Brothers, but I'd never read the play, and it turns out the play is quite different from the movie, and in my opinion, much funnier. So we jumped at it, and as I say, it came to our rescue. We were able to pull it together very quickly and plug it right into our season.
When you say pull it together very quickly, with a cast of 11, how long did you rehearse?
Well, Equity, that's the actors' union here in the States, only allows us a month's rehearsal. So from first reading to first preview, just a month. So 4 weeks with a cast of 12 and a play in which timing is everything and there's a good deal of physical comedy. It felt like it came together very quickly, perforce, but it did.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about past work by Peccadillo? Because it's embarrassing for me, but quite a few of the playwrights that you've revived are not names that I would immediately recognize.
It's true. We do O'Neill frequently. That's a name we all recognize, of course, because he's the first great American playwright. But then we've also done more obscure playwrights, such as John Colton. We did scandalous melodrama from 1926 called The Shanghai Gesture back in the fall of 02. We did to great success, and that takes place in a brothel in Shanghai in the 20s with the proprietress. Brothel is Mother Goddamn, as she's called. Some may remember the Joseph von Sternberg movie starring Jean Tierney, but in its day it was quite a scandal, and we edited the script and added music and dance. It was almost an adaptation of the John Colton play, and it was very well received. We also did a world premiere of a John O'Hara play called Veronique. Not many people think of O'Hara as a playwright, of course. People know him as the novelist, Appointment at Samara, and Butterfield 8, very successful screenwriter in his day. But his play Veronique had never been done, and I found it quite fascinating. So generally, Peccadillo concentrates on those American plays that we think need attention, that haven't been produced here in New York much, if at all, since their original productions. For example, we did Jigsaw by Don Powell back in March of 01, and again, Dawn Powell is often thought of more as a novelist than a playwright, but she was quite a fine playwright, too. Superb plays of hers have both been done in recent years, Jigsaw, of course, which we did, and Big Night, which was done up at Yale the same year we did Jigsaw.
Is your target period then interwar?
It's generally from about 1920 to about 1960, the era of the so-called well-made play. We have gone into the 60s a little bit. We did a production of S.J. Perelman's The Beauty Part, which was done on Broadway in, I believe 61, I think that's right. But generally, we concentrate on that 40-year period, which was just so fruitful for the American theater.
And it's exclusively American plays?
Exclusively, yes, just American. Not because there aren't such great plays elsewhere, but when you define a mission, I found that it helps if you limit your scope a little bit so that people can associate you with a period or an epic or a playwright or whatever it is. You can't do everything, and so sometimes it's easier to get your head above water if you narrow the mission.
And where do you go next? Presumably, hoping that Soho Playhouse and Room Service will be partners for a very long time, have you got the next year's program sorted out?
Yes, well, we're looking at a number of things. We have wanted to do a Lillian Hellman play for many, many years. Again, it's been complicated. There are often problems related to the rights of these plays. The playwrights are usually long gone, and so you're dealing with estates and attorneys, and so it's complicated, but we would love to do the prequel to Lillian Hellman's The Little Foxes, a play called Another Part of the Forest, which was done on Broadway with a young Patricia Neal in the 40s, and it's a superb melodrama. I think it's every bit as good as Little Foxes, and hasn't been seen in New York in decades. We would also love to see a play which is often done regionally a good deal, but has not been done in New York for a very long time. That's William Inge's Come Back, Little Sheba, in which the actor Shirley Booth scored such a triumph in many years ago. So those two are on our radar screen.
Do you find it frustrating working from an off-Broadway theater? Do you not feel that you would like the whole world to know about these plays?
Oh, yes, and they should, absolutely. It's of course, in this country, we have a little problem with cultural amnesia. We don't have the theater tradition that have. We're much more a film and video culture, television culture, unfortunately, I say, because these great plays go by the wayside, and you have an entire generation now who doesn't know Lillian Hellman. Lillian Hellman was really an absolutely great playwright, perhaps not the equal of Williams and O'Neill and Albee, but nonetheless a great writer and deserves to be better known, and we would love to be a part of that. So, yes, we're trying to keep the tradition alive.
You seem to be doing what Broadway is signally failing to do at the moment, which is producing American plays.
Yes.
At present on Broadway, I think the three main straight plays are all British.
Yes.
Simon Gray's Buckley, The New David Hare, The Vertical Hour, and Tom Stoppard's The Coast of Utopia. I'm really struggling. I know that Miller comes back, Williams comes back, comes back periodically. Are you really concerned about the state of American theatre at the big end, as it were?
Well, I'm concerned for a number of reasons, but you're quite right. There does seem to be a bit of cultural inferiority on our part when it comes to American plays. If it has that English imprimatur, it seems like our producers are much more willing to take a chance, but the reverse almost seems to be true in London, is that American plays and American musicals especially are very popular of late. I know that Edward Albee's The Lady from Dubuque is being done this spring with Maggie Smith, and not likely that would have been done on Broadway anytime soon. So, that's wonderful, but yes, it would be gratifying to see American producers taking a chance on some of these great older American plays, and for that matter, original American plays. It's a rough go.
Yes, I mean, again, it's noticeable. I think off-Broadway, some great young American playwrights, and we're now getting the coffee machine really coming in, some young American playwrights are seen, but generally possibly the best source for them to find houses is in London.
Yes, it very much seems that way, or off-Broadway. I mean, the public theater, of course, now especially under Oscar Eustace, is really taking on younger, unknown playwrights, and that's terrific. That's as it should be. But it does seem a shame that this great cultural heritage of ours is not seen more on Broadway. It really should be.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Do you also want to talk about... So we've talked a little bit about your past productions, but not about your successes. You have a list of awards as long as your arm. Do you want to talk about some of the award-winning plays that you've put on recently?
Yes, well, Elmer Rice's Counselor at Law was very good to us. It was a production of that famous Elmer Rice legal drama from the 30s. I can't remember the exact date now. Early 30s, as I recall, starring John Rubinstein. John Rubinstein is one of our great dramatic actors, and we did this at our home on Bank Street in 04, and it transferred off-Broadway in early 05, again with John Rubinstein and most of the original cast intact. And we were awarded the Lucia Lortel that year for Outstanding Revival, and I was given the Obie Award, sort of the off-Broadway Tony Award, as Best Director. So we were very happy with that. It was a wonderful production, and people seemed to love it. Again, people are so happy to see theater with large casts. They so rarely see these rich panoramas anymore. You know, I think... I speak for a lot of people when I say I'm tired of plays with one, two, and three actors, you know. Those have a place, of course, and there's some great examples. But, you know, our theater lacks breadth. And people would love to see actors working on a larger canvas again. But, again, the economics is daunting.
It's also interesting in Britain. I don't know if you've heard of the Monstrous Movement, which is a group of younger playwrights who... they've actually got their own manifesto, and that manifesto includes big casts. So they're actually looking, I think their first play was a play called Harvest by Richard Bean, which won Critics Circle Best New Play Award in 2005.
And what's the movement called?
The movement's called the Monstrous Movement. Is there anything like that at all over here yet?
No, really. Not that I'm aware of, anyway. There are a handful of theater companies in the city that... are devoted to resurrecting worthy plays. The Mint Theater, I think, has probably been around longer than any of them. The Keene Company is another group, and Peccadillo, we're sort of lumped together as the three not-for-profit companies that devote themselves to classic work. It was unique among those three in the sense that it is only it only produces American work. And also the degree to which we do large cast shows. We, over the last 10 years or so, have done plays with 15, 20, 25, and 30 actors. And we're not talking musicals. For a play, it's huge by today's standards. But audiences love it. But they just love the panorama of it. So that's what we do.
Very briefly, you're talking about not-for-profit. In the States, how does not-for-profit work? Because I can understand and keep hearing that all Broadway shows are not-for-profit because they don't make profits, but clearly you have some kind of financing that helps you to put on these big shows.
Well, not-for-profit means that you don't pay taxes, of course, and the people who donate to the company take a tax deduction on their donations. Although, of late, many not-for-profit groups, smaller and larger groups, have been more involved in the commercial theater. You see Lincoln Center and the Roundabout, which are not-for-profit companies, transferring shows to Broadway. So that, I think that many not-for-profit groups have found that they can subsidize their mission by entering into partnerships with commercial producers and plowing the money back into the mission of the not-for-profit so that one can feed the other. And that's what we've done with Room Service, of course. That is a commercial production now at the Soho Playhouse.
Dan Wackerman, thank you very much.